Land tax, stamp duty, tenants. Sure, property is great, but there are easier ways to get your passive income, sometimes with franking credits. Through ETFs or exchange-traded funds, you can buy a basket of shares in many different companies in one trade. BetaShares offers Australia's broadest range of ETFs, including income-focused funds, which aim to provide yield-hungry investors with attractive income streams. Discover the BetaShares range of ETFs and how simple they can be to invest in by going to betashares.com.au. Read the relevant PDS and TMD on the website and consider if the fund is right for you.
Families have a lot going on. Let Ollie help manage the mental load with new cognitive health supplements for everyone 4 and up, like delicious Lolly Focus Pops or Lolly Mellow Pops for kids. And for parents, try 3 new Brainy Chews to help you focus, chill out, or get energized. Find these cognitive health buddies for the whole fam at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
This is a podcast by the Rask Group. It's for educational purposes only. So please do not make a financial, legal, investment, or taxation decision based on solely what you hear in this show.
Welcome to the Australian Property Podcast.
We're on a mission to be Australia's most trusted property podcast.
I'm Owen Rask, founder of the Rask Group.
I'm Pete Wargent, author and buyer's agent.
I'm Amy Linardi, and I am a buyer's agent.
I'm Chris Bates, ex-financial planner and mortgage broker.
Together, we'll take you through every step of your property journey.
From first home buyer to decades of property investing.
This Rask podcast is going to seem really different. It's a wonderful conversation with an extremely entrepreneurial couple who I've followed for a few years. Liz and Matt Rad are serial investors in websites and digital assets. They're speakers and educators who have probably helped to create tens, if not hundreds, of millions of dollars of wealth for investors, financial independence community members, those just looking to escape their 9-to-5, and business owners. In this podcast, we'll be going backwards to how they first met, to walk forwards and map their fascinating business and investing journey. This podcast is all about investing in things you've probably never thought you could or should. If you want Liz, Matt, and I to do a round two, I'd love to hear from you. Please use the RAS community or ask a question link. Both are available in your podcast player to get in touch with me. And if you're half as fascinated as I am in what these two talk about, go and get in contact with them using the resources for this episode. If you do, let me know what you think. I begin by asking Matt and Liz about where they first met. Matt and Liz, thank you for joining me on the podcast.
It's great to be here. Thanks awesome. For having us.
Awesome to be here, Owen. Thank you.
For anyone that is listening, you can also watch this on YouTube, so go and check that out if you want to see the guys up close. I thought this conversation is just going to go basically anywhere, and it fits for most people. This fits firmly in the quote unquote alternative investing style side of their wealth creation, but I think as they'll discover throughout this, that it's not really that alternative, and it's quite interesting and quite a sensible way to make money while you sleep. So we're going to talk about a lot of passive income, things like valuations, things like everything from business to property to investing to how it suits all different types of people. But maybe to start off with, I was listening to the very first episode of your podcast, which now has, I'm just looking, 77 episodes at the time of recording, Digital Investors. And in the first, I think it was the first episode, I was taken aback because I didn't know this about the two of you, but I think you were both studying to be zoologists, and you, there was a comment made about red kangaroos, wanting to study red kangaroos. So I thought maybe this is a really interesting thing, a way to introduce yourself, how you met, what you were doing, and then we'll just go from there.
Out in the country, out in the back country of Australia, yes. Studying red kangaroos.
Studying red kangaroos, because we're both from the country, and right. when we
both
first
from
farms, and when we first met, what we wanted was to continue that lifestyle, living in the country. So we wanted a way that we could earn money and also
Have freedom.
Have
that
freedom.
That was one of our biggest values, freedom and adventure.
Yep.
And so that's why we're out in the middle of out far past Broken Hill studying kangaroos.
And, you know, we worked out pretty quickly. Zoology wasn't going to provide for us very well financially. But you're right, Owen. We were at that stage destined to be Australia's leading experts in red kangaroos. We were literally studying the iconic red kangaroo.
You can look up our papers.
Yep.
Published papers. We now have
scientific published papers out of those studies. But we very quickly pivoted to business. And the reason was when I met Liz, I realized he's a kindred spirit. She wants the same goals as me. Liz really wanted that location time independence, but for me, I grew up quite poor and it's always driven me, and for whatever reason, ever since I was a kid, I wanted to be financially free. And so, you know, no ifs or buts, I'll be blunt about it, I always wanted to be rich. And we just had, we had no knowledge, we didn't know how to do it, but we did figure out pretty quickly business is the only way. And that's why we very quickly got into business. So that's what drove us. And, you know, when you meet the right person, I guess Liz was on board, luckily.
Yes.
Let's just say I was very unusual.
Matt said, hey, let's do this. Yeah. And I went, oh, okay, righto. Because he was actually, you started a PhD.
Yep.
And I was 6 months behind in my degree at the time. And there was that kind of crunch point where we both said, okay, this is awesome. This is so much fun. And this is our passion. We love this. And we still to this day support charities and things in that area because we are passionate about the environment and the world. But we realized, okay, if we're going to actually make impact there and also create wealth for ourselves, we've got to do something different. And we're up for an adventure. So that's when we bought our first business.
So what was that business?
It was a little manufacturing business out in the country, and it was this guy, this crazy guy who was manufacturing spare parts for outdoor power equipment like brush cutters and whippersnippers, like, you know, chainsaws. And he was, it was a mess. The business was a total mess, but we could see, I don't know, we saw something there. We thought, wow, this is a way we could actually earn income and still live out in the country and have our life and freedom. It was a very seasonal business. So
and the
six months of the year, you didn't have to do much.
And we realized too, it could, so I was reading lots of books back then about, you know, success in life and things like that. And we realized this was a business where we don't have to get a job anymore. We don't have to work 9 to 5. That was our ultimate dream. We never, ever wanted to work 9 to 5, never have.
I did for a year.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
At the Children's Hospital. Yeah. I did a degree in zoology and they got a job at the Children's Hospital.
So in that time, I convinced Liz. So for me, when we got into that business, literally, I think it was less than 48 hours, I was hooked on business. I think within that 48 hours, I said to Liz, I'm going to hand back my scholarship, the PhD, which I did, and I'm going full on into this. Yeah. And
because I think we felt like we could control our own destiny from there.
I could
like
see how to get rich.
We could, what we did made the difference, not like having to ask for salary raises or try and figure out what was our career path. I think at that stage, I guess because we hadn't been working in a job like that, we realized, okay, there's a lot of freedom here as well. So, and that's one of the things that we wanted to go for.
So making like spare parts for chainsaws and brush cutters and these types of things, going from zoology and studying red kangaroos, I can't, maybe I'm wrong, but I can't imagine you guys were like experts in welding or these types of things. No. So that would have been, I feel like that would have been a pretty difficult transition, although it seems like you're highly passionate.
It was very difficult, but, and we made all the mistakes. And
well, first of all, we overpaid for the business because we got the wrong advice.
But the thing
that was a good lesson.
That drives us in a big way to this day, understanding how to do due diligence and evaluate and value a business.
That's part of our passion for education is that you know, when you go through a negative experience, you go, I want to make sure no one else has to deal with that. And that was part of the reason we ended up many years later getting into education, I think, because we were passionate about helping other people not go through that process.
But to answer your question, it was very, very tricky. As much as we loved it, we had a baptism of fire. So not only did we overpay, it's a very, very tricky business to run. If you are listening to this podcast and you are interested in business, I do not recommend for your first business you get into a stock-based business. And guess what, Owen? we kind of didn't learn our lesson for many, many years because we got so good at these very challenging businesses to run. We bought and sold multiple wholesale import or manufacturing businesses. That was our specialty. So we got really good at that business. Now, it wasn't an overnight success. We nearly went bankrupt. Well, Liz doesn't realize at certain times we were very close to bankruptcy. Like it was,
shielded me.
That was, we were that far. She didn't do the finance side. I did. But seeing your background, you've got all those books. That's how we learned.
Yeah.
So we had hardly any money. Every last cent would go in it. We were always on the edge. This was in the days when you could, you know, sign off on things with banks and bank managers. You don't have that option now. You probably couldn't get the sorts of loans that we got back then, I'm being honest about it. And we realized very, very quickly the way to turn this thing around was just get sales. We didn't bother about anything else. It was just we had to learn how to sell. We didn't come from a family of entrepreneurs. And the other thing that we did very, very quickly was because we knew nothing, we had to learn from books and we had to learn through other successful business owners. So we joined manufacturing groups here in Australia. We made sure we hung out with manufacturers. It became our life and it worked. Like we got so successful with that business, we started exporting to America. And we had our brush cutter heads on original equipment. We won some really big contracts here in Australia, like with Honda, Makita, all these famous names if you know that industry. But out of that, because we got successful, we were addicted to business, we were able to systemize it. So we outsourced everything. It was kind of the first business where we learned you can outsource literally everything. Mm-hmm. And so we could work from home. And then we had the ability to go out and buy and sell other manufacturing businesses or wholesale import businesses. And we did that for a good decade. And through that, where the journey got really interesting and why it's relevant to where we finally ended up buying and selling online businesses is that we loved it so much, is buying and selling businesses. We started doing it professionally for high net worths and we got involved in mergers and acquisitions, more so in Sydney. We're working with private equity firms, doing deals up to, you know, the millions up to 20 mil. And that's when our knowledge just went through the roof because we were typically working with very high net worth, some pretty famous entrepreneurs. And
then really understanding how money worked and how to get leverage in business and how to turn around. One of the things we did as brokers is that, so someone would come to us, say, I want to sell my business. We'd have to say, okay, well, we want to maximize the sale price. Here's what you need to do in a very short time frame to be able to maximize the price of that business. Mm. And basically that's what we now do with businesses, with websites, is we apply those same those same strategies to turn a business around quite quickly.
Yeah. Just as a real like pie in the sky figure, because obviously you coach people, you've got communities around you, you've got a very long track record of doing this. To give people some context of how many businesses or deals you might have overseen or either directly or through, you know, partners or through clients and success stories and whatever, how many would you have seen come and go?
I would say if you include online businesses, it's easily into the thousands. Like we've well and truly done our 10,000 hours. So literally every day of the week for the last, we've been doing this for 30 years. Is it nearly 30 years?
I'm not that old.
Liz isn't that old. I've been doing it for 30 years.
This is one way to stay together.
Yeah. Bricks and mortar, when you're an M&A and helping do these deals, you see lots and lots of deals. Like it's easily into the hundreds, and that's here in Australia. When you get online, you're looking at even more. Even our clients now would look at hundreds. So we're in the thousands. I don't know.
Probably tens of thousands over the years.
Probably. It depends how you define it, because we look at what's called Google Analytics in websites a lot. Literally every day I geek out and I'm looking at Google Analytics or doing due diligence. So this week I will be helping three clients do due diligences on anywhere from 50,000 deals to seven-figure deals.
Yeah.
So we're at the coalface of what's happening in, and that's what I love about it, because it's just so fascinating. To this day, I love learning about business and everyone's different. And
that's the best way to learn about business, by the way. If you're listening to this and you want to learn a bit about business,
practice due diligence.
Go and look at some businesses for sale. Mm. You will learn so much so fast. And that's what inspired us in business and guided us to find great business models is we'd get to talk to all these people. And, you know, I remember there was one, where was this bloke out in Wagga, like out in the back of nowhere, and he was making, how much was he making?
A mil a year
importing. Oh. He was an import business. Yep. And he only worked for 6 months of the year as well. This is what got us. That was the one good thing about manufacturing, wholesale, import. They were very leveraged, and we learned from, you know, seeing all these businesses doing all this due diligence. This is possible. We can have businesses that you don't have to work in 24 hours a day, that don't have to be massively stressful, that don't have to, you know, do a lot of the things that you think you need to do in business. So I think there's a lot to be learned from getting out there. As you can see, networking is one of the things, or talking to people. I believe people are the keepers of your dreams. You need to talk to them, because you find out so much. And that's the wonderful thing about podcasts like this. You find out, you get all these insights from people that you would never get to talk to necessarily. But that's something through our journey, before podcasts existed, we had to talk to people.
And probably not through something like this streaming software or recording software.
No.
So I wanted to talk a bit about valuation. We'll do that more maybe when we get to talking about digital assets. But you mentioned there, Liz, that one of the mistakes was overpaying and relying on probably the wrong advice. Can a lot of people that listen to this show love the idea and are fascinated by the idea of investing in public private companies, because they spend so much time investing in public companies via their ETFs, via their shares and that sort of thing. And they think, well, if I'm buying Coca-Cola shares, maybe I could go down and buy the local cafe kind of thing, right? And we know it's not that simple, but in that first instance, like a trial by fire, what went wrong in terms of the valuation and the advice that you received?
Can I answer this? It's something I'm very passionate about, because we relied on the advice of our accountant at the time.
Right.
And my experience over the years, no disrespect to any accountants listening, then accountants aren't necessarily the best people for valuing the true value of a business, particularly a complex one with inventory that flows in and out over a long period of time. And you've got to look at cash flows and things. But bottom line is, the accountant looked at the figures, and on the surface, it looked fine. And we see that a lot with lots of businesses. You just asked a really smart question. You know, how many deals have you seen? This is the one thing we've learned from looking at thousands of deals. On the surface, sometimes these things can look good. It's pretty easy to value them, but you do need to dive in a bit deeper. It's like with property. You know, property is actually pretty simple. It's a lot easier, I suppose, but still you can get things wrong if you don't.
There's still questions that you need to ask.
Yeah, if you don't know what you're doing. So with businesses, of course, there's a lot more to it. And it's not as simple as just looking at the numbers. What you really need to look at, particularly with bricks and mortar businesses, is, okay, relationship with clients. When we took over that business, we worked out very quickly, he was pretty much going bankrupt, and he was about to lose some of the major clients.
Right.
And that doesn't reflect in the figures. The accountant didn't pick it up. And so to this day, you can only get that through experience and what we call reps, just practicing. And it's a lot of fun. You learn heap. Like Liz just said,
you talk to people.
You do practice due diligence. And the great thing is, with websites, you can get publicly accessible information that we used to dream of 30 years ago. Like, you know, to do due diligence on a bricks and mortar business, it's almost forensic. You know, you've got to really know what you're looking for. And I learned off the best. That was one of the things that I loved about hanging around with our high net worth friends. They're all super successful through buying and selling businesses. And literally that's why, you know, I'd work for them for free, basically, just to learn what they taught. And the main thing they taught us was how you do due diligence and evaluate a business on the back of an envelope, literally. These are multi-million dollar businesses, or businesses in the tens of millions. Most of them, you know how we'd sell them, Owen? It would be in the western suburbs of Sydney, in a McDonald's. Before we go into the business, we would meet, we'd hang out, and my, I call them friends/mentors, who are people looking at buying these things, would show me, okay, Matt, here's how I'm valuing this business based on this. These are the key areas that we need to be careful of in a manufacturing business. Now, myself and Liz have a lot of experience ourselves, so it obviously made a lot of sense. So these days, when I walk into any factory, whether it's in the western suburbs or wherever, within about 30 minutes of talking to the owner, I can be looking around. I've got a pretty good idea of what that business is worth and what it will sell for and why. And it's not just the figures. There's other things that sit in there. With online businesses, If you're listening to this, it's heaps easier. It is way easier once you know what you're doing. There's specific things you can check. It's a lot easier to check off on things because everything's tracked.
I think it's kind of like if you think about buying a property, you know how you can see the list price and you can see, okay, here's the recent sales and all that sort of stuff. So we do the similar thing with a business or with an online business. But we do still need to go in and check that maybe are the electrics okay? Am I going to suddenly have to spend 10 grand because the electrics are a bit bodgy? So we're going to check that. Is there problems with the downpipes or guttering? Is there water damage? Is there and it's like getting the building inspection, the building and pest inspection, I guess, on a business. And there's certain things that you just want to look out for, just need to ask the owner about just to make sure that, okay, yes, this business is going to continue in the way that it has been going in the past 5 years or year or whatever it is that you're looking at. So that, I guess that's a good analogy to think about. It is similar to buying a property in that you just need to look at some things under the hood as well, ask a few questions.
And I think one of the things we've learned, Owen, over the years of coaching people through this, particularly with online businesses, is there's a part two to what Liz is saying now that I think we're really good at getting people to pay close attention to is, what's the opportunity going forward with this business when you buy it? Is it appropriate for you? Because maybe all the stuff that Liz just mentioned stacks up perfectly. The numbers might be really good, but hang on a minute, does it fit where you're at in life? You know, you're in your 50s, that's typically our audience group, or are you in, you know, can you take on more risk? Do you have more money, less money? But more importantly, what are you going to do with this site, this website, to renovate it and grow it? And how does it fit in with your overall portfolio and your investment portfolio?
So, oh, we've got a great example actually, Owen. Can we share an example? Sure. Just in terms of valuation, because there's your frontline valuation of, okay, it's a multiplier of the profit. Businesses are valued generally at a base level of multiplier of the profit. Similar, like, you know, in your share valuations and everything, really base level. We're looking at multipliers and all that sort of stuff. But beyond that, what we're also looking at is the value for us as a buyer can be really different. So we've got one client, Annette, who she is a retiree, and they wanted to head off into the distance and go traveling. And she and her husband really excited about going off traveling. And she owned a travel blog. She was writing about her travels as she was going around. And in that journey, she actually found in a Facebook group another person who had done that journey already, created a site, had a brilliant social media following, had a beautiful website, lots of traffic, was making, how much was it making? I can't remember.
It was only making about $1,000 a month, maybe less.
That's not bad though, $1,000 a month when you're on the road. That's a lot of nice lunches and nice accommodation. And so she approached that lady and said, because she said, I'm looking to sell.
No, the lady offered to sell it.
Oh, the lady offered to sell it.
Through the Facebook group. And because no one recognised the value of it, no one was interested. People didn't even realise that it's a valuable asset because it was kind of like a travel blog. It didn't look like it was monetized. But Annette saw it straight away. And she approached her and said, oh, I'd be interested. And they just agreed on this kind of price because to Annette it was a no-brainer, $5,000. For a site that she already knew back to front, knew it would make money.
So now for Annette, because Annette's already in the travel niche, already got a following, she melds those two businesses. So it's like an M&A. It's just like in the big corporate world. You can M&A your own businesses at a $5,000 level. And now her portfolio of websites, that increased in how much did it make?
She got it up to $4,000 a month.
$4,000 a month.
That's net. That's net profit. So
it's unbelievable.
So to her, that asset was worth way more than that. But she knew the value and was able to pay a lot less than actually it was worth.
So she was someone, did she take your course and then go
She did the full due diligence. And Annette's a real go-getter. Like she's built sites following what we teach, and that's how she knew that how to renovate the website. So that comes back to the other part of due diligence. Is part of due diligence that we're really good at helping people is understanding the forward opportunity. Now, if you're listening to this, you never pay for forward opportunity, but it's a really important part of due diligence of any business, but particularly online, because that's the exciting bit. Because in the right hands, a website for someone in a niche like travel, if you don't know anything about travel and you've never made money there, it's probably just worth the asking price. But for someone who's already making money like Annette, it's possibly worth a lot more. So interestingly, on that site, both myself and another travel blogger in our community immediately offered Annette 10 grand for the website.
And she
declined. And the other travel bloggers who literally this week, as we're going to recording with this, they've just done the same thing. We've got a lovely young couple called Chris and Beck. They're traveling around Australia in a four-wheel drive. Chris just asked me to help him out with figuring out the forward opportunities of a travel blog he's bought in very similar circumstances. Mm. He's found an aged travel blog. It's about 14 years old. The person's neglected it, doesn't do anything with it. So Chris just offered him $5,000 and the guy's taken it, and it's a brilliant buy. Just for the content alone, it's 14 years worth of genuine content sitting on that. And Chris said to me, Matt, when I went through it, I can't write those articles to that quality. You know, I instantly, as of next week, I will have 300 articles, 14 years old, all edited, combined with images. So there's lots of little, there's really cool little ins and outs of valuable assets now that are highly valuable online when you know what you're looking for.
Mm. So I'd like, obviously I'm quite familiar with the ecosystem, but for folks that aren't familiar at all with what it is that exactly you're buying. So can you talk about how websites make money, the different kind of streams that you see, and then maybe also you could talk about how the transaction takes place. So there's kind of two questions. Like, how does a website make money when you say it's making $4,000 of net profit? How does that happen? Let's start with that.
Yeah, good question.
So good question, because I'll say a lot of people, when they hear Liz and my story, they presume we are buying e-commerce websites.
Like things that sell products.
Online. Yeah. Now, Owen, that's why the first part of this podcast was so important. We are not fans at all of e-commerce websites or any business that has anything to do with products because of our background in buying and selling manufacturing businesses. As young entrepreneurs, it was painful at times how much it held us back, having half your net worth or 90% of your net worth tied up in a warehouse in the western suburbs of Sydney. It's a lot easier now. So when we got online, Liz was the one that figured out, why don't we just do what we've always done, Matt, buy and sell businesses, but let's just buy online businesses. This was around 2008. And when we got online, the deal was between the two of us, we are never, ever going back to a
physical stock-based
business. Well, I don't
want to say that you can't make a bucket load of money out of e-commerce.
That was
you
just
can.
Between us.
So there's three main ways that websites generally that are for sale are making money. So you've got your e-commerce, which are stock-based businesses.
That's out.
Yeah. Yeah. It's very passionate about that. Yeah. Selling a product. Most people start there because it feels comfortable, it feels safe, it feels like I've got a physical thing and I can sell it and I buy it for this price and I sell it for that price. It makes sense. I do get that. That's fair enough. The other one that's very common is SaaS, software as a service. So things like we were talking about before, the plugins, like people who make a program and sell that program over and over again. Microsoft Office is a SaaS business because it has a program that it sells over and over, and you basically rent the program from the creator. And now that's a fantastic business model because you can create it once and sell it over and over and over. And on the stock market, those kind of businesses are very valuable.
In our marketplaces, the multiples are a lot higher. They can get up to 7 times, 5 times. But we don't recommend those for
beginners. But those are difficult.
All right, guys, I might just stop you for one moment because you said 5 to 7 times is high for one of these SaaS businesses, and people's ears will be ringing because they're used to these businesses on the stock market being 100 times. Are you talking about net profit there when you say that?
Yeah. Net. So everything we talk about, whenever we talk about websites making, you know, 100 grand a year, that's net.
Yeah.
And this 5 times, that's a multiplier. So most bricks and mortar businesses and online businesses, standard businesses, are sold on what's called a 3 times multiplier. So typically that's your starting point. So if a website makes 100 grand a year, you'd be looking at investing around 300K to buy that business.
100 to 300,000 is kind of within that fair valuation range, but that does depend on a lot of factors, things like the history of the site. valuation is very similar. When you're buying a business, it's very similar when you're looking at a stock market. You're thinking, okay, is this business going to continue doing what it's doing? Is it, has it got growth potential? Mm-hmm. What sort of foundation does it have? Does it have traffic? What we in websites, it's about how many people are visiting the website. Does it have a list? Does it have connection with those people? Does it have community? All those things, what we're looking for, all the things that make that business a more secure deal kind of thing, like a, and something that we believe will continue to grow and has potential to continue to operate and has potential to grow.
And the one thing we've learned over the years from M&A at any level, whether it's in the millions or hundreds of thousands or tens of thousands, is recurring revenue streams always bumps up the multiplier. Yeah. So that's why SaaS businesses, come back to SaaS businesses, they're quite simple, done once, done forever, famous last words, by the way. But that's the theory. And so once you've got this software, people pay a monthly subscription to have it. That is highly, highly sought after by big corporate buyers. They love buying up SaaS businesses. So typically now and currently in the marketplace, and I think going into the future, it'll only get better, SaaS businesses are sold anywhere from a 5 to 7 times multiplier.
But what's interesting, so that's one of those little magic tricks, isn't it, of the stock market?
Yeah.
Because if a corporation on the stock market valued at 100 times buys a business from the owner at 7 times, that business is then suddenly valued at 100 times. It's like it's magic, money out of thin air.
And that was our job. We used to be a spotter for those private businesses that would then get taken to public, to the public
bought
markets.
Bought by public markets. And so that's that magic of multiples.
So you've got, so Liz, you're saying you've got the first one, which is the e-com, then you've got SaaS. What, and what's
the,
how do
now
you
the third is the one that we discovered and that we focus on because they can be small and nimble. You can start at any level and they are businesses that make money. They're content websites, which means they provide information. And they provide or you know, things like reviews, things like information about particular topics in particular niches, similar to what you own, where you're providing great information. And they can be monetized in a many different ways through advertising, through referrals, through affiliate payments, through selling courses, through all these ways of selling information, basically. It's kind of like owning a billboard. If you were thinking of it in a real estate way, it's owning a billboard in front of a busy trafficked area and we basically own the billboard and advertisers pay us to put their ads on those websites. So it's incredibly leveraged. We don't have to even deal with the advertisers if we don't want to. There's not even any customers because if we're doing referrals, we're referring the person on to someone else, the business who is doing the sales and everything, but we're getting paid a referral commission. So it's an incredibly leveraged business model. It's one where we didn't even have to deal with customers or suppliers.
We just make
all
money.
All we had to focus on was providing fantastic content, generating, creating a community or building a list or building traffic and making sure that that was a great place for advertisers to put their message.
So it was the ultimate for us when we first got into it, we realized this is the ultimate business model out of all the businesses that we looked at for us to, because we just made money off selling electrons. That was it. We didn't suddenly, it freed up all our capital. We didn't have to keep putting money back into the business in terms of physical inventory. And we literally make money off getting people, like when people click on things. But also the reason why it was ultimate for us, it fit our original goals when we first met, was we make money 24/7 worldwide. So also what was exciting, because our background in manufacturing and we'd been there exporting, trying to crack into America, now we could do it with no borders whatsoever in our Jimmy Jams, literally at night. And then you go to bed, you wake up in the morning. Remember the first time you get paid overnight, like into your AdSense account or affiliate account. And it might be $1,000 turn up and you go, I was asleep when that happened. I spoke to no one, did nothing. And we were like kids in a candy shop. We remember those first few sites that when it started to really work in a big way for us. And literally we suddenly had access to us. It was just a total mind blown. Now we take it for granted, but we had this easy access to America, 300 million people, and we could go into real tight niches and literally.
And help people. And help people. Part of it was because we always went in with the intent of how do we create something that really helps this community? Whatever that niche is, how do we provide awesome information and what people need, what people are looking for? So that I think when we're teaching people how to do this, one of the things that we want them to know, to sort of think about, is that, okay, yes, you want to make money and you want passive income and all that sort of stuff, but if you want to be in business and stay in business and go for the long term, really the goal is how can I help people? And I think if you go in with that kind of attitude and that value, then that builds you a really great foundation of a business that is really long term and sustainable over the long term. So even through, like, when this all started, and I think a lot of, maybe some of your listeners have thought this potentially, they think, oh yeah, this is, you know, this is cowboy land, this is, you know, it's not real, it's whatever.
It's
because
real.
There were a lot of people in that marketplace originally who were pretty fly by night, pretty flighty, wanted to get in, make their money and get out. But I think the market has changed phenomenally over this, to whatever it is, 15 years that we've been in here. It's really matured, and the way the Google algorithms and everything works now, it means that it does favor people who actually have a genuine interest in helping people as well.
Yeah.
So that's definitely where we're coming from longevity. In what we teach people is the longevity comes from being genuine and actually delivering something great.
I've got to say, Owen, I think what you're doing is the perfect example of that. You think about the awesome free information and also your paid information. It's really, it's helping people create financial independence. That's the winning goal. If you can help people in a certain sphere that they're interested in, a niche that they're interested in. So we love going into passion niches or finance or health. And if you can help people do that, you're going to get your tribe and your following. And then we found it really easy to make money because at the very least you just get corporate sponsorship. That's the easiest way.
Yeah.
Just get direct advertisers. That's basically our business model in a nutshell.
Yeah. I like it. That's that's where Rask is today, right?
Yeah.
I think content businesses are quite foreign to people, but I feel like as you were talking through it before, it's kind of like the content is on the balance sheet, right? It's a huge asset. It's something that can produce the cash flow in the future. And so a lot of people, like the travel example before, we said there was all these blogs that were there and the content that I could never write is there. And that's like, that's an asset. It's worth something. Just because it's an intangible asset doesn't mean that it's not real. I also really like that idea, and I often think about what is a content business or what is a media business or what is insert online business. And I think if any business owner that's listening to this can think, or a contractor or even an employee, treat yourself like a business, think of yourself as like, how can I serve my audience? A lot of the time, people, when they build things, they build it for themselves and they don't truly realize that they're not the audience. If you've ever tried to build something and someone walks along and they're like, what are you doing? And you're like, oh, well, this goes here and that goes there and this goes here. And you're like, I never would have thought about that. You obviously built it, so you have the knowledge, but no one else would understand it. And I think every day you wake up and you think, how can I serve my audience better? I feel like that's like a true North Star for any business owner or individual. Speaking of, there was a second part of this question, which is, let's go nuts and bolts for a second. Someone comes in, they've taken part in your course, they've been mentored by you, and you think, okay, they're just going to go off into the sunset and they're going to start their journey in digital assets. How does the actual first, or how does any transaction actually take place? Like, how do you know that what you're getting is, you know, the website is going to transfer to your name? How does that actually happen? Is there a contract of sale? Can you take us through that? Like,
Day zero?
We'll both have interesting answers to this. The first one is, we would recommend for any listener, if you're interested, is always start out small. Just buy a small site. Like, the good news is, it's not like bricks and mortar world where you used to have to spend six figures to get a decent business. You can start on a basic learning site for under $5,000, maybe even under $1,000. It's a learning site. And what we recommend is you buy it off a platform like a broker, because they can step you through it and there can be help with the transfer and stuff like that. So it's a lot easier than what it was 15 years ago when we first started. There was no marketplace. So that's the cool thing for beginners, and you can do it part-time. It's not like you have to quit your job to do this. You can just buy a simple thing that you practice on.
So in terms of platform, so if you look on the Flippa platform, which is the world, it would be the world's biggest marketplace of websites for sale. You actually buy the website through that platform, and they help you with anything that, because it's quite small assets, you don't have to have a full legal team and the whole thing going on. It can be an email saying, okay, included in this sale, or not an email, sorry, a message on the Flippa platform and part of the listing on the Flippa platform to say, okay, this sale includes all content on this website. It includes these resources. It includes maybe some owner help, like transfer help. It includes, now, of course, the domain name. So everything really does hinge on domain name for websites, because that is the valuable, when you're talking content websites. Mm-hmm. So for SaaS and for e-commerce, it relies on, you want all the supplier connections, you want the programmers, you want the IP, you want to make sure that you're getting all the programming and all that sort of stuff as well. The other reason we love content websites is they are very simple. It is literally just the website, the content on the website, the domain name, potentially some connections, like maybe some writers. Often if they've got a business that uses certain outsources, the outsources may come with that business. So it is about a conversation of, okay, what is included in this website sale, and everything that you need. Ideally, it's everything that you need to run that website and to have it keep making money. And so that can be quite a simple contract of sale. And then it is about transferring that domain name across, using just from one domain account to another, and then transferring the website files across and putting them on your own hosting account, and then changing those name services. It can be as simple as that. For a content site.
Yeah, it is. I'm just thinking, comparing it to bricks and mortar businesses. Like if any of your listeners are wanting to get into a business and just dip their toe in idea of owning your own business, obviously this is the simplest way. You don't have to be.
Because you're not paying huge broker fees. You're not lawyers, paying heaps of lawyer fees and all that sort of stuff.
Or accountant fees. You learn how to do the due diligence yourself. But on your first site, you know, it's a learning site anyway. You're not expecting to make mega bucks out of it. It's so you can learn the system. Because what we found, Owen, over the years of training beginners to do this is once they get the system, like understand how it all works, then it's exactly the same with content sites. Yeah. It's exactly the same process no matter how many zeros are on that buy price or on the net profits. It's the same thing. If you buy a $5,000 website, you're going to do the same sort of process on a $50,000, on a $500,000, and on a $5 million website. Content sites are pretty simple how they work in essence. Like the model is, as we've described, it's just, you know, make money off ads.
As we go up in price, so obviously, if you're buying a $5 million website, you will be doing some serious due diligence and you will need a contract of sale. So please don't think that I'm saying that, like, that you don't need a contract of sale on a $5 million website.
But my point is the business model is the same, and so why not learn on a small little site, and then it's still so much easier. I would say that, you know, when you even up to $1 million, it's a lot easier to buy websites and bricks and mortar businesses.
Yeah.
Like Dave and Connor bought it in a weekend.
Yeah.
They did the deal on a Monday morning, you know, the $1 million. So, and it turned into a massive win.
Yeah. Let's just sidestep for a moment. So I could be out there buying a website and I, you know, switch the domain name across, get the change the name servers once the hosting switched over. That probably sounds like gobbledygook, but I'm sure people would learn that when they work with you guys, but or just if they've got a technology background. But
that's not hard to learn. That's
But
you do need to learn it though.
Yeah, that's it. You can't just take off without it. Yeah, yeah.
True. Good point.
But say for example, someone, and I'm sure you've dealt with this question 100,000 times, I just haven't heard the answer, is, okay, guys, you're telling me to buy a website, but why not buy a Facebook page or a Twitter account or a TikTok or a YouTube channel, or why not those platforms? Why not a podcast? You know,
that's a really good question.
Really good question.
And actually included in a website sale may be a Facebook page, a Facebook group, a YouTube channel. So, yes, all those social media channels can be included in a website sale. One thing to be aware of though is that all those platforms, you do not own your YouTube channel, you do not own your Facebook group. Facebook does. So actually, and I don't believe this has changed, you won't. Facebook, it's actually against the terms and conditions of Facebook to buy a Facebook group in and of itself associated with a business. They, you know, you transfer it across, but it's not. Yeah, I wouldn't go around thinking that you can build a social media presence and then necessarily sell it. That may change. Flippr is changing. It is actually creating listings of
YouTube channels.
Yeah,
now.
YouTube channels. So that may change over the period, but we're still wary. What we want to own, we always want to own your own asset. And I don't really, you don't have control ultimately of your Facebook group or your YouTube channel, because if YouTube suddenly decides they don't like it, they can shut it down and it's gone. Whereas the website is yours and you own it and you control it. So that is something for us that is important. We want to be able to own our assets.
Renovate. I guess it's kind of one of those things where it's like maybe it's akin to, seeing that we used the property analogy before, maybe it's like buying an apartment and then realizing you've got body corp and you can't do anything because strata and this and that. Yeah. And, you know, you got to go through you got to get the minutes, you got to do this, it's just a nightmare. So maybe that's the analogy that I can run with is you want to buy a house.
Yeah. Right? You want your block of land. Yes.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. But yeah, don't build it on someone else's backyard. Well, that's where just as an aside, I often find that quite curious about podcasts is, because it's a similar technology in that with a website, you've obviously got like a domain name, like an IP address. With a podcast, you have an RSS feed, which you can take between hosts. It just happens that the search engines happen to be Apple Podcasts and Spotify mostly, whereas in digital like assets that we're talking about predominantly today, it's Google or Microsoft equivalent, right? Okay, so one question that I have is things have changed a little bit since you guys got involved in this space, and quite recently so with the way content seems to be getting created these days. One thing that I've always been conscious of is like if we take this property analogy, and this is not me just by butchering it again and again and again, but I remember when I was a kid, I would walk around my local shops and I would pick up the local real estate agent's like magazine, and it would have all the houses in there. And sometimes at the back of the book, there'd be like a really poorly done ad for mortgagee sales and you could get bargains and that sort of stuff. And as the proliferation of like classified websites came to the fore, people started using realestate.com, domain, insert, you know, name overseas. And I often think that it increased the visibility. So the transparency of what you're buying, what was listed, and transparency of prices was there. So in finance lingo, we'd call that price discovery. It was like you would know that if your house, Matt, sold today and Liz was right next door, it's exactly the same house, it'd probably be around the same price, right?
Yep.
Now, that's great because it opens the doors for people who were a bit worried about the industry or who were afraid that, hey, maybe I'm getting ripped off here. It kind of gives them some comfort. But on the flip side, it also means that enterprising people and people who are early adopters, like you guys were in this space, maybe it changes the paradigm and maybe there's not as much money to be made. So I'm curious, like with the proliferation of things like Flippr and marketplaces and even coming on this podcast and sharing what you know, obviously it's going to be great because heaps of people probably like myself are going to rush to your website and take your course because they're going to be like, I've just paid 100 times for my zero shares. I can go and potentially buy an asset for 5 times. That's gold. Yeah. But like then everyone does it, right? And then the market moves into a mature phase. So I guess my question is like, how has it evolved over time? And do you foresee that this will continue in the future?
Yeah, great question.
So it's a really good question. And interestingly, we've been asked this from day one when we started talking about this publicly. People keep
Have we
missed the market? And back then, my original answer was, well, I've just come from bricks and mortar business world. And as far as I know, that's been around for like, you know, at least a couple of centuries because businesses are there. And my answer today is still the same. Online businesses are part of society now. They will always be traded, bought and sold going forward into the future. But the real answer I think these days is, and I know it's particularly relevant now, there's a lot happening in our marketplace. What you've got to realize if you're listening to this is, I guess, do you call it the law of large numbers? So we can all comprehend, you know, we're in M&A, right? We're used to doing deals up to 10 million, maybe 20 mil, up to about 100 mil. Beyond that, I'm not just talking dollars wise, the human brain can't comprehend the number a billion or more. I know I can't, and I'm used to being around large numbers. So where I'm going with this is I think the biggest mistake that I see beginners make is exactly that question, Owen. They overthink or worry that is this marketplace still there? There are literally thousands upon thousands of websites up for sale every day. If you can't find a good deal in there, you know, there's always a way to make money online now. And as an example, the other day I ran a live webinar. I jumped on. You can go on there right now on the Flipper platform. You can go, please don't buy these sites without learning how to do due diligence and checking things out yourselves. But literally there are curated, like, pre-found websites sitting on the platform now that make over $10,000 a month. That's net. There are 374 listed right this minute, and that changes every day. And my point is, on this live webinar, I showed that. We went to six other website brokers. After about 15 to 20 minutes, I had pointed out at least 1,000 seriously good websites from around the world that are making all over 10,000. Each and every one of them has been checked out by a broker. They're connected up to their Google Analytics and to the bank accounts. So to a degree, they've been verified. It's over 1,000 websites currently at any one time of some of the world's leading website brokers for sale. So the trick is understanding websites move like bricks and mortar businesses do. They move with the economy. And, you know, some are bad, some are good. You've got to know what the value is and how to do good due diligence. That is the key money-making skill here. There's always wealth and abundance, and it's getting bigger. Like, you know,
I guess it's like shares. There's always going to be businesses that are listed on the stock market and have shares.
So what is it? Google just released their reporting. To this day, Google still makes, I think it's like 80% of their revenue still comes from how we make our revenue, AdSense.
Advertising.
Yeah.
Advertising. Mm. You know, even in a recession, when we started this in a recession in 2008.
When it was tanking. Everything was tanking.
Here's what we found. AdSense sites went up in revenue because successful small businesses still need to advertise to get leads. And back then, Google AdSense revenues went up 15%. So it's definitely true, though. The market has changed without a doubt. Valuations have actually gone up.
Well, it was yeehaw land when we started. I actually wouldn't recommend, I'm glad it's not like when we started, because no. I wouldn't be recommending a beginner jumped into the market that we did, because it was yeehaw land. Like it's kind of like, you know how cryptocurrency is going through its yeehaw land, and, you know, there's all the stuff. I like it now that it's a more mature market. The assets are, I think, safer than they were previously. But yes, in essence, you're right. Things will change. I think that's, as entrepreneurs, we kind of accept that is part of this journey, that things will change, and things have definitely changed over the time that we've been doing this.
The main change we've seen is it's not the wealth and abundance or the lack or like, obviously, as I just pointed out, there's actually more deals now.
Yeah, and more good deals.
And
yeah.
More good deals. It's easier to find the safer deals. I think what's changed, coming back to why we got into this, it's not as passive as what it used to be. You could literally, we had websites that we would work on once a year. That's it. And we would
make money.
$4,000 to $5,000 a month, month in, month out. That's net profit without even, Liz didn't even know the logins.
And we might have bought them for 20 grand.
20 grand. Those days. We made a lot of money very, very passively. But there's still passive.
We've got one, actually, that was an example we were talking about before. We've got one, we actually build websites as well, because, you know, even starting from scratch, you can, and this is one we built, 5 years ago, probably? I think it was about 5 years
ago.
Which
one are you talking about?
And it consistently makes $450 a week for the last 5 years. So what's that? Is that 20 grand?
Yeah, about that.
Yeah, about 20 grand.
Yep.
So that actually cost us virtually nothing to build. But let's say you wanted to buy that asset off us, we'd probably, you know, we'd be selling it for somewhere like 60 grand maybe. but I wouldn't sell it. Not this one. There's plenty of people who will sell them, by the way. I know that's another question that we get asked. Why the heck would you sell an asset like that? But people need the money. We buy them off people who, you know, they have tax bills or they have family bills or they've got a whole portfolio and they're moving up to bigger websites. So they sell the smaller ones off. So there's all many reasons why people sell great assets. So 60 grand, say, that you would buy that asset for. When you think about it, 450 a week, to buy a property that makes 450 a week, that's probably $700,000 or $800,000. That's a lot of risk. That's a lot of money and a lot of debt. And that's the other thing that at the beginning, debt's hard and we did not like being in so much debt when we were in business. And so that was one of the other things we wanted when we were looking for a business model is how can we grow cash flow but not have to go into massive debt? And these are still assets that don't require a lot of cash to get into and to generate that cash back. And usually what we're looking to do, going back to that real estate analogy, is I'm looking for websites that I want to be able to double fairly quickly. And we've got our 30-30-30. If you just increase traffic by 30%, the number of people coming, increase the profit by 30%, say, you know, if we diversify the monetization a bit or do something like that to it, and then if we increase the conversions by 30%, that doubles the website.
Yep.
And we will do that over and over with this website. So we can often buy an asset at, say, 3 times, but within months we've got it at 1.5 times.
It's not months now. That's the one thing that's changed.
Yeah, it takes a bit longer now.
So that's what I'm coming back to. That's the one thing really that's changed. There's better deals out there now. Mm-hmm. There's a lot more of them, but you've got to put in a little bit more work.
It's not quite as passive, potentially. You do need to be working at this.
But you can still do it part-time. That's the thing.
And you can leave a website for months and it just does its thing.
Yeah. You don't have to turn up every day on them or anything like that. So they're more semi-passive now rather than as
super passive
is what
is that because like you've got to update SEO, you've got to update content, that type of stuff.
That's the main thing.
I think the content requirements now are a higher level.
But I think there's more opportunity coming up, but there's a lot of fear out there now, right now, because of AI content and stuff like that. But the good news is we've been saying this for the last 12 months. Don't use AI content because in this day and
not
age,
for SEO.
People want real content, real people and real followings like yourself. Like we were all talking about before, if we can help people with genuine content, problem with AI is people don't know whether it's content. So the goal these days.
Don't know whether it's real, you mean?
Don't know whether it's real.
Yeah.
So the goal these days is real content in passion niches that people can trust and that, you know, because they're looking for information. And
we've got one client, she has an exercise equipment site and she actually doesn't know a lot about exercise equipment, but what she does is she gets experts to write articles for her. She's got an Olympian writing articles for her about these particular training things that the Olympian uses. And so you just get a bit creative about how you get your content and make sure that it is value adding, again, going back to that idea of, okay, we want to really add value to our clients, so we get real content. And that's going to win. Google, everybody gets freaked out about Google, but really what Google's trying to do is just deliver a great user experience for their customers, for their users. So if you provide great content, real content, then that's what Google, all it's doing is trying to get its algorithm to give you that great content. Mm. So that's the...
So say, for example, I had 50 grand and people in finance love to talk about really complicated jargon, like return on invested capital. Like, it sounds like mystical, but it's just how much money you're getting back for that 50 grand, right?
Yeah.
Let's say, for example, I had 50 grand, you guys had trained me, or if it's just I gave you 50 grand and said, hey, it's yours, do whatever you want with it. And you went and invested in some of these digital assets. Yep. Loosely speaking, how would that money compound? Like, can you give us some context around someone that's done this before, someone that it knows what to look for and it goes well? What type of numbers, like annualized numbers or something like that, are you looking at?
That's a really, because it depends what level you're at. If you're a beginner, intermediate to advanced, our experience is with most content site or most web online businesses, as long as you're not putting money back into physical inventory, you'll have to put money back into content. It's we call it the graph. It goes exponential. So things get easier as your site becomes more successful online. It goes up higher in the rankings. You get more people, more advertisers see it. You've got more chance of charging more money for direct advertisers or getting sponsorship deals. So the goal is to, you actually want to hit the inflection point. But ROI, most content sites have very high conversions. Once they're up and running, you're looking at 80% margins. So you can see that on all the brokers. A lot of the brokers now show the margins. So e-commerce is anywhere from 10% to, you know, 30%.
So if you had the 50,000, you'd be buying a site that's probably making about 15 grand a year, say $1,000 a month. That's $1,000 a month sort of size site.
Yep.
And what I'd be looking to do with that is to, obviously, I'd be looking at, okay, I'd want a site that I can renovate. It depends. I mean, for someone who just wants to continue as is, you might buy a site that you believe will just continue at that $1,000 a month. You're happy with that to maintain it as it is. Mm-hmm. I would always be looking for a renovation opportunity. And ideally, as an experienced person, I'd be looking to buy a site that I'm already in the niche, so I can kind of leverage my existing outsources and all the things. That's where it gets momentum
when it goes exponential.
Like once you've got one site, like we said with Annette, when she's got one site, another travel site is easy to add to her portfolio. So you get a portfolio, you kind of like start being your own little mergers and acquisitions. But ideally, like that 30-30-30 idea, it's surprising how often that works. Is that we focus on, okay, we need to, in the renovation, the main things that we're focusing on is, okay, if I want to double that $1,000 a month, is there some other monetizations that I could add to that website? Could it be monetized better? Maybe it's just using Google Ads. Actually, who is a client who recently, they bought a website, it was monetized with AdSense. This is something that happens often. But the person who owned it lived in, it was India or somewhere like that. And in India, they get paid less for their AdSense than in a Western country. And so they bought the site, and as soon as they transferred it to their AdSense account, it was making 50% more than the other owner. So there's these little tricks, like there's these little things that you learn as you go through that you find these leverage points that we, that's what we help people with, is to go, okay, well, if I buy that asset, what I already have will increase the value of that, even just by me owning it, let alone having to do anything to it. So that's what I'd be doing, is be looking for an asset that will be complementary to what I have. But if I'm a beginner, I'd be looking for an asset that I have probably some connection to, maybe that I'm excited to work on, that I'm keen to get into, and that I would be focusing on how do I increase the advertising revenue or the referral revenue. Simple things like the lady I spoke to about before, exercise equipment. She literally just rang her affiliate manager or emailed her affiliate manager and said, hey, I'm getting 5% here. Is there any way I can get more? And the affiliate,
because her site started to rank quite highly,
because it
was
getting more traffic. And and they checked it out and said, oh, yeah, you're doing pretty well. Oh, yeah, you can have 10%. Bam, double. Sometimes it's as simple as that.
We had this happen to us the other day. An affiliate manager reached out to Liz and I. We hadn't even checked the affiliate account. And they said, do you realize you've got over $10,000 sitting in there, and we'd like to offer you, we're on 20% affiliate comms.
Oh, yeah.
They've gone up to
30%. Well, they've offered us 50%. For the next 6 months, they're giving us 50%.
To encourage us to promote their product.
So, you know, like.
And we didn't even chase that
to
one.
To he who has, more is given. Yeah. Like, it's that abundance mentality. Once you're in here and you're looking for those opportunities, it's a place where the world will provide.
So Owen, it is hard to give. I know you finance guys like to look at, you know, ROI numbers. Yeah. What we more work on, as I guess, because our background's buying and selling businesses, we just look at multipliers. So if it makes 10 grand a month, it's worth 30 times that, or three times a yearly, either talking monthly or yearly. And so for us, ROI is always based around this three times thing. So, you know, I've got a $300,000 website. I'm expecting it to make me around 100 grand a year. Or a $30,000 website, I'm expecting it to make me around 10 grand a year. That's basically how we do our planning, and they're our – I know it kind of looks like a rubbery figure, and it is somewhat online because things change, but it's a that is actually kind of our KPI, our benchmark. And when we're – and honestly, looking over all the websites we've seen over the years, it's funny, it's a really good benchmark to work off.
It's a midpoint. It's a really they can good, sell for more than that. They can sell for
no,
less
but the
than
ROI.
They're still bargains.
Yeah. But the ROI bounces around that depending on what you invest.
The way I'm thinking of this, and based on like if you're buying to renovate, your payback period is going to be in like months or very low years, probably 2 years if you do it successfully.
If you can renovate and get that profit
if you can
up.
Anywhere from – so one thing we want to be really clear if you are listening, what has changed, we keep saying within months, but it realistically I think most renos, when we look across our whole community, the reality is you're looking at 6 to 12 months plus because SEO now – unfortunately, is a lot slower. But the good thing is, because of that, you're building a much better asset long term. So you've really in this game, it's like in bricks and mortar, you've still got to think long term. It's not the short term, as short term as what it used to be. But that's a really good way that you just described it. Yeah, is looking at what's your payback time, work at like 1 to 2 years, being conservative, and that to us is still way quicker. I mean, you know, over all the years that we've valued businesses, all our friends are successful entrepreneurs, you know, with bricks and mortar world, the average time to get what payback. We call successful or payback is we found generally around 14 years plus. Whereas with online businesses, you're looking at, we say to our clients, have a 2 to 3 year vision for, you know, creating financial independence or whatever your goals are. And we find online businesses are a lot quicker in general than bricks and mortar businesses.
I love that. There are so many examples and so many businesses that you guys have influenced that our community would be familiar with and not even know that you guys have played a role in helping those businesses accelerate. And this has been an absolute delight. I've got so many questions. I'm going to have to ask you guys to come back if you're generous enough to come back for a second time. People can head to your website. Where would you want people to go if they want to discover more about you guys and get involved and learn? Because I imagine everyone listening to this, they got to the end of the show, will be doing the same thing as I will be. Where do they go?
They can go to our main site, ebusinessinstitute.com.au. And on there, there's lots of links. If you know, if they're interested in our actual strategy and how we buy and the main steps that we take, there's a free masterclass on there. We also talk about our program, but there's a free masterclass. It's a 90-minute masterclass. Or they could also just check out our podcast, like you mentioned, Owen, and see your most of our podcasts are our clients.
Our clients, success stories, like people who are out there, real people who are doing this and hearing how they're doing it. So the wonderful thing about this strategy as well is everybody goes their different direction. So what our goal is, we give people the foundations. We teach them, okay, here's what you need to know. Here's what you need to ask. Here's the skills you need. Here's how to set yourself up. And then depending on what they love, where they want to be in life, how they want to design their own portfolio, they take it in their direction. So that's the good thing about the podcast is you'll hear all the different directions that people have taken this. But, the free masterclass, we go into, you know, due diligence, the buy and sell process, our overall strategy and how we think about this stuff. So that's a great place to start to get an idea of this market and see if is this something that you would be interested in.
Yeah, cool. I'll put links in the show notes to all of those things because they're wonderful.
Thank you.
Liz, Matt, thank you for taking some time to do this. This is probably one of the most interesting conversations I've had this year, and I do a lot of them. I do really appreciate it, and this is something that I'm truly passionate about. So you've probably got a new user in me that will rock up on your doorstep in no time. So thank you guys for joining me once again.
Oh, thanks so much
thanks
for
so
having
much
us.
For having
Loved
some.
It.
Thanks for tuning into the Australian Property Podcast.
If you love the show, why not subscribe or leave us a review on Apple or Spotify?
And if you want to work with me, Amy, Pete, or Chris,
you'll find links in your podcast player to get in contact with us.
For more than a decade, I've been hunting for the best investors and their methods, strategies, and tools for investing. After years in the industry, countless books, a few degrees,
and 1,000 podcasts and live shows, I've rolled this accumulated knowledge into something called RASC Invest. If you've ever heard me talk about a core and a satellite, active and passive, true long-term compounding, or you simply want to know exactly how I would invest, now is your chance. RASC Invest is our new investment service, designed for all types of investors who want professional management of their core portfolio at a low cost from a team they trust. RASC Invest helps you automate your wealth creation and passive income. Simply click the link that says Invest with Owen in your podcast player to join one of our live platform walkthroughs or book a call with us. You can also view the RASC Invest PDS and TMD and get invested with me.